Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Tweet at DriveTimeRTE.
We find it necessary. We know we will win. We have confidence in the victory of good over evil. Fight the real enemy.
Fight the real enemy, as she ripped the poster, the photo of Pope John Paul II. That is the famous Saturday Night Live performance from Sinead O'Connor. And at that moment, when she was ripping that photo, Daniel Glass was in very close proximity to her. Let me tell you who Daniel Glass is. He's the president of the record company Glassnote. And back in 1992, he was the boss of EMI Records in the US. And he was there, as I say, very close to Sinead O'Connor when she did that. And it got the whole world talking. Well, Daniel Glass is with me now. You're very welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ronan.
It's Cormac here, but that's okay. You spoke with a colleague of mine, Ronan, earlier on. That's no problem. Can I ask you about that? Because the whole world, and again, the whole world is talking about that ripping of the photo of the Pope, Daniel. It's incredible, and you were there. What was your reaction at the time?
Well, it was a really beautiful evening. We went to dinner before at a restaurant called the 21 Club, which is down. It's a very iconic restaurant, and my wife and I took out, you know, some of the most influential media programmers in America to dinner, and it really was my second time working with Sinead. I had worked with her at Chrysalis when she put her first record out when she was basically a teenager, and she brought us this first brilliant album called Lion and the Cobra. And as a result of me being the head of EMI, which encompassed Chrysalis, SBK, and EMI Records, they were merged. This was a joy to me to be back with Sinead, and she delivered a brilliant album in 92. And we were excited this would be an opportunity to reintroduce her to media and really take the career to the next level. And Saturday Night Live being the most, you know, pivotal, you know, crucial television show for music at the time is a key element of your campaign. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of excitement, and I was not at the rehearsals on Thursday. That's when Saturday Night Live does the rehearsal. I heard they went very well. Our head of publicity was very excited, and we had dinner, and the show begins at 11:30 p.m. live, and she did her first song, which was fantastic. And, you know, while it's going on, I was sitting in the second or third row of the mezzanine, which overlooks the studio. It's a small studio. And the programmers, the media people that we invited, all looked back at me and gave me their thumbs up. And like, it was sort of an affirmation, like, we're going to take care of this Monday. She's back. You know, we're going to take care of business here. And this is great. And it was, one guy was named Brian Phillips. Another guy was named Steve Kingston. And these were very influential alternative rock and programmers. Mm-hmm. So when the second song is about to go on, everybody's excited. And that's when she made the change and did her spoken word and ripped the picture of the Pope up. And I had never witnessed anything like that in my life. It was
the reaction,
shock.
Yeah.
The shock, the awe. And as I remember it, no one knew what to do. So people froze. Normally a director and an assistant director has commands, like cut to camera one, fade to black, no one did anything. There's silence. And that delay, whether it was 6 seconds, 7 seconds, I'm not even sure, it felt like eternity. People froze. And obviously that camera person kept fixated on her. And no one knew the magnitude of what had just happened from a political standpoint, a religious standpoint, a cultural standpoint. So we were in shock. And I remember the producer, who was in such a good mood, Liz Welch, her emotions changed very, very quickly. And, you know, she was basically crying after that and upset.
And how was Sinead, Daniel? Because you went to her dressing room immediately after that.
Well, Yeah, so that the dressing room's on the other floor. We went downstairs, and no one knew what to do. You know, people are just shuffling out, which is the normal end of SNL is usually euphoric and a lot of hugging and high-fiving and, you know, well, let's all make plans to go to the party, the after party. So no one is talking to Sinead. And she was in her dressing room by herself. I knocked on the door, and she's in there. Her hands were clasped behind her back. And she was, I don't know if she was mumbling poetry or singing a lyric or staring, but it was a nervous, she was moving around a lot. And she had her socks on, I remember. And it was hard to talk.
Did you talk to
her? She obviously didn't want, no, she didn't want to talk. And I said, are you okay? And it was really no discussion. And obviously the cliche question would have been, are you going to come to the party? And I didn't say that. I just didn't know what to say.
Why? Did you not want her at the party?
No, I would have wanted. I wasn't, by the way, I was not embarrassed or ashamed. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, I learned to always stand for the artist, with the artist, by the artist at all times. And I would continue that. And
but the music industry didn't so much, did they, Daniel?
The morning after was not pretty. The morning after was not kind. I guess in this generation, people called cancel culture and things like that. But no, the industry shunned her. The industry shut her down, removed her from some playlists, and did not support that album and that record. And it was very difficult. I will say that our head of promotion, Ken Lane, drove her to Z100 the next morning, where she went on the air. And very, very odd to put someone like that on the air who's not top 40, because that's a big pop station.
But not after SNL the night previously. I mean, defended herself, didn't she, that morning?
She was amazing. She was amazing when she talked about the Pope. She talked about the hypocrisies of abuse and what happens to children. She talked about herself and really, not justified, but explained what is going on. And obviously, years later, everybody said Sinead was right. What she exposed. She just, her podium was an interesting one. Her shock and awe was interesting. But what she said, what she believed, what she spoke about was, a lot of it was fact. And people couldn't handle it because religion is very, very hard for people in a lot of democracies to talk about.
And it was fact, and it may have been known to some extent then, but certainly not as prevalently or as extensively as we know now.
Right.
And I just wonder, if that were to happen today, would the reaction have been the same? Would the cancellation of Sinead O'Connor be the same if it were to happen today?
You know, unfortunately, if you asked me this question 4 years ago and 5 years ago, I would say no. But there's the air is very strange in the world right now, on the left and right, on the red and blue, especially in this country. And I think the most left-leaning liberal arts schools have become the worst critics, opponents, and abusers of free speech. So, you know,
Well, can I ask you this? And that's a hypothetical, I suppose, anyway. But let me bring you back to that time then. And you describe it so well, Daniel. 2 weeks after the Saturday Night Live program, there was the famous Dylan tribute gig in Madison Square Garden. And I watched that, and we played it on this radio station again today, when she was introduced by Kris Kristofferson to the crowd, and some cheered, but an awful lot of them booed. And you mentioned the silence. The silence earlier on, but she stood there defiantly then, didn't she?
She did. And I think having Kris Kristofferson's arm around her and that blanket, that hug, was very, very important. I mean, we were so emotional that night because there was a small section jeering her and booing her. And a Bob Dylan show, you know, we're at, you know, the prophet, Bob Dylan. And you would think that, you know, the anti-war, the politically correct people would be there. But it was ugly. And you knew there was a section of America or of the public who was angry and was scared. You know, I've been a pretty outspoken guy for rights in my entire career. I was probably the most outspoken heterosexual when the HIV/AIDS era started, and I helped co-found LifeBeat. And it reminds me of how people with HIV and AIDS were shunned in our business. I mean, there weren't even human resource departments to get them a dentist, which is why we started LifeBeat, the organization, to help people. I draw parallels to that of how people died anonymously, lonely, had to hide. And it was sad that in our business, there wasn't a more welcoming, nurturing, inclusive atmosphere. Here, you know, we were supposed to be rock and roll. We are supposed to be rock and roll. We're supposed to be edgy people that are supposed to be having real artists. But I will say that I was trained at Chrysalis Records, and my boss, you know, like Chris Wright, and bringing a label like Ensign Records in, which was led by the late Nigel Grange and Chris Hill. These were record store guys. These were guys that loved records and songs, and they gave a voice to people like Mike Scott from the Waterboys and Carl Wallinger from World Party and Boo Hewardine from The Bible and obviously Sinead O'Connor. And, you know, her first manager is a wonderful man named Fachna O'Kelly, who's still around and still a wonderful, wonderful man, a visionary. I reconnected with him yesterday.
Can I ask you this though? And you mentioned people who stood by her, but they were in the few, weren't they? In the music industry.
In the few.
And we're getting texts here from people who went to school with Sinead O'Connor. Let me read you one line from a text, and I'll read the text later on for our listeners. But this listener says she was bullied for her nonconformist behavior, but she still held her head high. And it just reminds me of that image of her standing on the stage, being booed in Madison Square Garden, standing there defiantly with no expression on her face, looking out into the crowd. And I just wonder, the music industry of all industries that is supposed to support artists that go against the grain, that hold up a mirror up to society, that teach us about ourselves when we don't want to be taught, really. I just wonder if you feel guilty in any way about how Sinead was treated by your own industry.
By the way, it's easy. Three words. Shame on us. Shame on us as an industry. Listen, I had it last year. I participated in a think tank panel about anti-Semitism, racism, and hatred. A week after someone hung a banner, Kanye was right. On the freeway in Los Angeles. Okay? Mm-hmm. And where were the people that stood up there to talk about it? And it wasn't only anti-Semitism. It bleeds into everything. Where was the music industry when that is going and still going on? Mm-hmm. So I always say shame on us because we do amazing things. I'm on boards to cancer organizations, AIDS organizations, relief, whether it's a hurricane, an earthquake, a flood. We're an incredible, resilient industry. What we've done for people in Ukraine in the last
but there is a
year, year and a half.
Yeah. And I think,
but when it comes to the Bible and when it comes to certain things, a freedom of speech and outspokenness and rock and roll, We buckle. We're not rock and roll.
Maybe it points to the I don't know if you'd call it a political sickness or something askew in America, certainly, but and right across the world, maybe, that you alluded to earlier on. Look, we'll discuss that again, possibly at another time. Thank you so much, though, for paying tribute to Sinead O'Connor on our program today. Daniel Glass, president of the record company Glassnote.
Let's remember that brilliant music, brilliant musician. Wonderful lady and a family friend.
Well done. Thank you, Daniel. Bye-bye.